I guess I just woke up in a funk this morning. I got to get my car fixed. Welcome to the Movie Ladder Podcast. God, all right, I'm starting over.
A Movie Platter Podcast.
I thought I could just keep going through that, but no,
All right, we're leaving all of this in.
Take two. I guess I just woke up in a funk this morning. I got to get my car fixed. And welcome to the Movie Ladder Podcast. We're climbing the rungs of cinematic connections. Each week, we're discussing a movie that connects to the movie from the previous week's podcast. I'm Zach Brooks. And for the 218th time, I am joined by...
Brendan Fitzpatrick.
And for the 16th time, and second week in a row, the person who never pronounces library, Megan the Librarian.
Who are you guys? Sorry. Have we met?
Yeah. I got a note that said that I should not acknowledge you in any of these podcast conversations. So I'm not going to acknowledge you.
I like Brendan Fitzpatrick. That was pretty good.
I think that might be my favorite line reading of this entire movie is when they do the slow down, Patrick. So good.
Yeah. I have a friend named Patrick, Pat. But I always, sometimes I think Patrick when I see him.
You know, I feel like you should have gone by Patty, Brendan Fitzpatty, instead of Fitzy, Brendan. You could have gone by Fitzpatty.
No, I'm good. That's Patty.
Nice. You are really the Elijah Wood of this podcast, Brendan.
Honestly, I'll take it.
Compliment.
Yeah, I'll take it as a compliment. I mean, Elijah Wood and I are almost exactly the same age, which is why I've always been a very big fan of his. I've sort of always had an affinity for him as an actor. Yeah, he was the good son.
Yes, yeah. And a Hobbit.
And a Hobbit, yes.
All things we could be doing next week. All right, well, last week we talked about Revolutionary Road. We had Megan on the podcast. And this week, due to a Kate Winslet relationship drama connection... We will be discussing Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, if you weren't able to pick up on that by the title of the podcast you're listening to, or the things we just discussed. Then, at the end of the episode, we will decide on our next movie based on suggestions sent in by you, the listeners, and us, your hosts. We will be spoiling Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Last week, it was on Criterion Channel, which we said on the podcast, but the month turned over, streaming rights changed, it is now on Peacock.
Yep.
And it Crave for you, Megan?
I don't know. I have the DVD. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Nice. On Megan's show.
Yeah, there's no Peacock in Canada.
Yeah. No. It could be on Disney Plus, as we learned many times over, that Disney Plus Canada is very, very strange. Poor things coming to Disney Plus
Getting
Canada.
Much stranger, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is only rentable in Canada.
Oh, man.
Oh, all right. Well, good thing you owned it.
Yeah, good thing.
So, yes, we will be spoiling the movie. So if you want to skip ahead here, we're going to be watching next week for episode number 219. Timestamp, as always, is in the description of this podcast. For some of you, that is a clickable timestamp, hopefully soon for others. But, of course, we always suggest that you pause the podcast, go watch the movie. Maybe you've forgotten it. Maybe you need a refresher, and then come back and listen to our discussion. And send your feedback at LadderMovie on Twitter and Instagram, movieladder@gmail.com, the Movie Ladder on Letterboxd, all the ways to get in touch with us and send us. Fun stuff, ratings, suggestions, all of that. We did it. We successfully completed Oscar month.
Yeah,
Movies that have been nominated in some fashion the whole month.
Yeah, I mean, do we keep it going this coming week? We don't know, but the Oscars air on Sunday, which is very, very exciting. One last chance to get your Oscar predictions into my annual Oscar prediction contest thing. There's no real prize for it or anything. It's really just the pride of knowing that you're smarter than everybody else that submitted predictions.
We'll say your name on the podcast next.
Yeah, we'll say your name on the podcast. The link is in the show notes.
Yep, it has been for the last couple weeks, and I'll have to remember to take that out next week when I do post the podcast. Yeah, play along. It'll be fun. Megan, how's your week been? It's been a whole week since we've seen you.
Yeah, it was okay. Today at work, I had a moment of triumph because there was like this big project that people were pushing that was going to put a bunch of work on me. And I said, this is a terrible idea. And everyone ignored me. And
This is an idea for me to poop on. Is that how you were triumphant?
That's what I said. And then, nice. But then I just kept saying, I think this is a bad idea. I think this is a bad idea. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Today, they were like, we also think it's a bad idea and we're probably not going to do it. And I was like, yeah.
There you go.
Triumph. It was a good feeling.
Nice.
Best news I've had at work in a long time.
Nice. Good.
Yes, I always hate when I, bark up the wrong tree or, go on a wild goose chase for something that I'm like, I know that this isn't going to happen, but yep. I'm just going to go and, do this thing. And then you spend all this time and effort working on it, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait, no, we're not doing this.
I go through a lot of those. Yeah.
Unfortunately, I've mostly spent time, talking about how this is a bad idea. I haven't actually done any work yet, so... I think I've hope I'm probably jinxing it. Tomorrow they'll be like, oh, actually, we've decided to go ahead. But seems at the moment that I have dodged a bullet.
Nice.
Keanu style.
Well, speaking of Keanu, speaking of not dodging bullets, who wants to start? Best thing you watched this week?
Megan, you start.
Oh. Okay, well, I watched...
What happened? Sorry, we were out of sequence apparently. Forget everything I just said.
Yeah, you were doing a Dune thing for a long time.
Oh, I'm sorry. So we are out of sequence in the listeners are hearing all of this as we talk over each other because there was a pause in the conversation, so I filled it with Dune. And then Zach said, Megan, go ahead. And I was like, okay, never mind.
I didn't hear you. You were so slow to get to Dune and so quiet. I thought you were just making noise. Brennan, you go first. You start.
Yeah, talk about Dune.
I'll talk about Dune 2. I went to see Dune 2 on Sunday. Really great flick that Denis Villeneuve. He knows what he's doing. Had a lot of fun at Dune. Got the special Dune food menu at Alamo Drafthouse. That was pretty cool.
Did you get the popcorn bucket?
No, but I got the special Bremen sand dip and chips. That was really good. It was basically just hummus with chips and
spice?
Cucumbers. It was very spicy hummus. It was good.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice.
And then, the movie itself, really great follow-up to the
best
first
thing
one.
This week.
Huh? That was the best thing I ate this week, yeah. I think people definitely need to go see Dune 2 in the theaters if they're all at all interested in it. I think it's much more important to see this one in theaters than it even was the first one visually, because there's so much more visually to feast your eyes on in this one than the first one. All the performances are great. I had a really great time. Had a few nitpicks and questions coming out of it, but overall... It's just nice to have something that sort of feels like Star Wars used to be. You know what I mean? Like this modern sci-fi epic saga that feels familiar, but also fresh and new at the same time. It's just really cool to, that doesn't feel like we're retreading IP that's been done a million times. Like it's nice to have a new thing.
It's like the first monoculture we've had since last summer with Oppenheimer, right? Like movie monoculture, which we used to get monoculture movies pretty frequently, I feel like. And we haven't had one of those, since Barbenheimer, I feel like.
Yeah. So I definitely think it's worth seeing in the theaters, especially for the performances and the visuals. And hopefully they will be able to complete the trilogy, I think Villeneuve has said that he definitely, his plan at this point is for it to only be a trilogy, so one more. And hopefully they kind of stick to that, but we'll see.
Although Dune 2 does complete the first book, is my understanding.
Right.
I will find out for sure when I do get that book in from the library in a few weeks. Library in a few weeks. But,
library,
Megan, where is Denis Villeneuve from? I know he's Canadian.
He's from Quebec. He's a French Quebecer.
He's a French Canadian.
Yeah,
French.
He's he's a good Canadian filmmaker. Yes.
Yep.
Excellent.
Makes good
Can Con. Yes. Sure. He does. He's made a lot of good movies.
He has. He hasn't really missed when you look at his filmography. I think I've enjoyed, if not absolutely loved, everything that he's done that I've seen.
Enemy was that great.
I loved Enemy.
Okay. I like Enemy. It's like a weird. I like the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, it was so weird. Yeah, it was very.
It's very unlike anything. Yeah. Well, I mean, like of his more recent stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, Megan, you go ahead.
Well, I did watch movies this week. I remember last week I didn't watch any movies. This week I was like, okay, I need to catch up, and I spent like all day Saturday just sitting watching movies. And I think the best thing I watched this week was 2 Weeks in Another Town from 1962. It's directed by Vincent Minnelli and starring Kirk Douglas. And it's kind of like a spiritual sequel to The Bad and the Beautiful.
Mm.
But it's about, and Edward G. Robinson is the other star. Kirk Douglas plays like a actor who's in rehab, and Edward G. Robinson is the director who's worked with him like 7 times. So they have this like famous partnership, like a Scorsese and De Niro kind of thing. And Edward G. Robinson has gone to Italy to make a movie, as you do. And he calls up Kirk Douglas and is like, I got a role for you. And then kind of goes from there. And it's about like how Hollywood can be really toxic and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's, colorful and like kind of over the top, and yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think it made me want to. So they actually use clips from The Bad and the Beautiful as like it represents a previous movie that these two characters made together.
Got it.
Which was also directed by Vincent Minnelli. So
right.
Made me want to watch that again, which I've been meaning to do. And I think I would watch 2 Weeks in Another Town again, because I feel like knowing how it ends will make it more fun to watch.
I'll have to add that to my list. I've never heard of it.
It's good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Cool. It seems like a good Criterion movie. I don't think it's in the Criterion collection, but it should be probably.
Criterion adjacent.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I felt like I watched a lot this week, but I haven't really watched that much. But also then I remember that we just recorded on Thursday, so it hasn't actually been that long. So it hasn't even been a week. Dune, probably the best, I mean, definitely the best movie going experience of the week, of the year so far for me, like very much like knocked my socks off. I, like Brendan had nitpicks. Like, I think it's very good. It is not very great. But I think it'll grow on me. I think with additional watches, I am excited to read the book. Like, I'm obsessed with learning more about this world. So in that aspect, it really like drew me in. And I think like my big complaint is that I wanted more. Like, I just want, like, I wish, like, it's a long movie and there's two of them, but I want more than what we got. And so, like Brendan, I hope we get a third one that would be based on the second book, to be determined if we get that. But I would imagine, based on how well this is doing, we will. Although, never trust David Zasloff to make the right decision. So who knows?
Right.
Yeah. So I will say the best thing I watched is a movie I gave 5 stars to. It is a movie that is 100 years old. And I realized I started a tag on Letterboxd called 100 Years Greater, which anytime I watch a movie that is 100 years old. Now, if I go by date, it is like 99 years and 11 months old, I guess, because it's from 1924, but it came out in April. But that is Sherlock Jr.
I've seen it before I rewatched it.
Because I watched another Buster Keaton movie, and I went and wanted to listen to the Blank Check podcast that they did on it during their series, and they paired it with Sherlock Jr. And I was like, I should revisit Sherlock Jr. Like, why not get Podfluence? So it's only 45 minutes, but it is amazing how much is packed into this, and also how much commentary about the magic of movies is in a movie that was made in 1924 before movies were like really like people knew a ton about movies. So,
that's a great one.
Yeah, I watched a Buster Keaton documentary over the weekend, and they talk a lot about what went into making Sherlock Jr., and especially like the couple of stunts that Buster Keaton died that nearly could have killed him if one little thing had gone wrong. Like, that's just kind of the actor and filmmaker he was, you know, and that's really impressive. So, I mean, I need to have watched more Buster Keaton, and that's sort of a blind spot I need to fill in for sure. Mm-hmm.
Well, the nice thing is because they're so short. I mean, most of them are pretty short that, you know, you can watch Sherlock Jr. like the amount of time it takes you to watch a TV show. And what I did learn when I was listening to that Blank Check podcast, which I might try to go back and do their whole Buster Keaton series. I just haven't gotten around to it. I did learn that there's a stunt, and you can find this stunt on YouTube, that Buster Keaton broke his neck and had no idea that he broke his neck
during
that stunt.
Yeah. It was three years later. Yeah.
Like, he went to a doctor years later and they're like, you have a cyst on your neck because you broke it years ago. And he's like, oh, that's why it hurt.
Yeah.
And if you watch it, like, I watched that stunt on YouTube and I was like, oh, like that looked, it looks painful. And then he just gets up and runs away after, like, after he falls. Like, it is crazy. Yeah. He just kept going. There's also a scene with, like, where he's shooting pool. And I have no idea how they did it because he's like trying to shoot pool and not hit this one ball that's actually like a bomb that's going to go off. And I have no idea how they filmed that. Like, is he just a master at pool? Were they like doing things?
Apparently
under the pool
he was a really great pool player.
Yeah. So
I feel like these physical slapstick comedians are a different breed, which leads us to our movie.
Jim Carrey. Oh, all right.
Yeah. Jim Carrey, the Buster Keaton of his time.
Yeah. All right, I like your transition.
Buster Keaton.
Yes. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, made 80 years after Sherlock Jr., if we want to just throw that in there.
Yeah, the 20th anniversary of Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Mm-hmm. What month did this come out, Brendan? Do you have it in front of you?
I don't have it in front of me, buddy.
Let's see. Oh, wow, we are almost exactly... No, we are almost exactly March on the 20-year anniversary.
Wow.
Oh, man, yeah, so March 19th. Yeah, a couple weeks shy.
March 9th was the premiere.
The
LA premiere was March 9th. Yeah, the theatrical release March 19th.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A day after my 19th birthday as well.
Wow.
Yes. So it is, we've all seen it. It's a rewatch. It is about it is like a sci-fi romance movie about this procedure that allows you to delete memories from your mind, and people use it to delete bad relationships from their mind. Our two main characters.
As we see in the doctor's office, pets who died, or any kind of relationship that they wish to erase because it's too painful, any kind of memory that broke my heart. Like that when they go in and see like the lady
with the dog
with the dog bowl, I was like, oh, that's so bad.
I had a dog when I was a teenager and she died, I think it was 2003, and then I remember watching this movie on DVD at home. It must have been the second or third time I'd seen it. And I hadn't noticed that lady before. And when I saw the lady with the dog stuff, I lost it. I like wept. I was sobbing.
So sad.
It really, and yes, you know, Philip was sitting next to me while I watched the movie last night. I was like, oh, Philip. But it's, yes. Because it really, like, I don't know. Losing a pet is really, really difficult because there's such a part of your routine.
Mm-hmm.
It really is a good parallel to a relationship, like to a breakup, to a lost relationship.
Yeah, for sure.
A lot of parallels to that. I think so. This was written by Charlie Kaufman, directed by Michelle Gondry, right?
Michel Gondry.
Yeah. Michel
He's
Gondry.
From France, not Quebec.
Yeah.
Okay. There we go. This is a movie all three of us have watched, but I think my biggest takeaway watching this movie, and so I watched this movie twice. I finished it and I was like, I want to rewatch like the very beginning again, just because we do go back and I just wanted to see like, are there differences or the things you catch like, up watching immediately after? And there were. And then I ended up watching the whole movie a second time. And it was like, oh, I watched it twice. All right. And like just those little details, like the detail about the pet that you just brought up, like those are just things that they're not dwelled on. It's not in your face. It's just like just stuff in this universe. And there's one really interesting thing that I picked up on the rewatch, and I'll be curious if others picked it up. Because I was like, I had to rewind and be like, did I see that correctly? And so we'll talk about that. But Megan, this is a movie. This is your 5-star for you, as we said last week. Not to spoil your review. Maybe it changed between your last viewing and this one, but I did notice that it's a 5-star. It's a 5-star for some of the listeners as well. I was glad to see that. Brennan, it's not a 5-star for you. You said that you didn't like this movie the last time you watched it.
I saw this movie in college. I was third junior semester maybe when I saw this in college. This movie didn't really work for me at the time, but I was also a much more unsentimental movie viewer, you know, when I was 24 years old. What I will say is that this movie worked better for me on this watch, but I still don't think it's a perfect movie, and I can't wait to get into it because I do have issues, and I think that there's a central conceit to the movie that you have to buy into, that if you don't buy into it, you're gonna butt up against the movie.
What's that conceit?
I don't think that these two people should have been in a relationship to begin with. I don't think that Jim Carrey's Joel and Clementine have a single bit of relationship chemistry or romantic chemistry. I don't understand their relationship and how they were in one in the first place. And I think that's a failure of the film, where they spend so much time flashing through the good memories and very little time really dwelling on why these two fell in love. Because all the memories you're seeing are when they're already in love and in the middle of their relationship being erased. But you don't see the courting and the start of that relationship and why these people fell in love in the first place. And I butt up against. And I think part of that is also, I don't think that Jim Carrey works in this role.
Oh, I think he's perfect.
I really love him as an actor. I don't think he works against Kate Winslet. And I think part of that is some of our, you know, and some of our feedback people may get into this, but I don't think that he works against her. One, they just don't look like they are compatible people, and maybe that's why their relationship fell apart. And
so
they wanted to
Leo in this role, is what you're saying?
No, but like it just doesn't work for me. However, I do love their characters individually, but I don't think that their relationship works together, and so therefore I butt up against that. But I enjoy all the little moments in this film, and all of the acting in this film is great. Like, the cast is wonderful. Each individual performance is great, but I don't think that the relationship between Joel and Clementine works for me entirely. And I think part of that is I don't buy Jim Carrey being in love with this person.
Well, I think one thing I will rebut, because there's a lot to rebut from what
you
said.
And maybe that's on purpose. I mean, maybe you're not.
Yeah, I think some of that is on purpose, because the last line that we get of them together, and might be the last line in the entire movie, is, "I'll get bored with you and you'll feel trapped with me." Like, that even though they get to the end of this and they're going to, like, this relationship is going to restart, like, they both know that it might be doomed to fail again, right? Like, it's that might be, like, the whole point. I also, on both watches of this, was trying to figure out, like, is there a chance that this is not the first time that they've done this? And I don't think it is.
I don't think it is either. Yeah.
But I feel like all the stuff when they're kids that we see, which I guess is just like projection, and it's like that we're going into
them hiding in each other's memories.
We're going into the times when Joel is like embarrassed as a kid, right? He's trying to hide. And I love that detail of like, how is he going to hide in his memory? He's going to hide in like their very repressed stuff that he doesn't want to remember. Because it'll make it harder to find him. But I did wonder if, like, well, we see them as kids playing together. I'm like, were they kids that knew each other, that fell in love, broke up, erased? Megan, you're shaking your
head. I don't think so. No.
You think that's too cute?
She's just tagging along his memories. But I think it's interesting. Like, I do think they have good chemistry. And I do agree they're an odd couple, for sure. But I think, like, Joel is this sort of, like, quiet, maybe a little depressed, right? And she's so outgoing. I think it's obvious why he's attracted to her. And then for her, I just think it's like he's nice, which is the word.
And that's the trigger word throughout this entire film is the niceness. And I think that's part of my issue as well, is that Kate Winslet's character, if I understood more of her character, I think I would get it more. But she is such a manic fragmentation.
Yeah, she's like the definition of manic pixie dream girl.
She's such a manic pixie dream girl. You get no real, like, no memory we ever go into in this film is hers or her perspective. It's all Joel's memory of Clementine. And so we don't even know that we are getting the true person of who she is.
We see her in the present when she's dealing with the whole Patrick thing. How she's kind of freaking out. And the manic pixie dream girl thing is like super, super annoying. But I feel like in this movie it works, just because we are spending the whole movie in his head. And it's like we're told it's in his head. And she has that line about how I'm not a concept or whatever, which is like,
But then the movie seems to completely be rebutting that line.
Well, because it's his perspective, I think.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so, yeah, exactly. And that's what I wanted to get into. That was the thing I noticed on the watch, and maybe on like the second watch. And again, maybe everybody notices this, and I just blew my own mind, and like, it's no big deal. But so I was like, there's the character Frank that we meet only in the hallway.
Yes.
He is one of the many ways that this movie reminds me of Groundhog Day.
Of course. Yeah.
But he reminds me of the guy in the hallway in Groundhog Day. Also a little bit Ned Ryerson.
Yeah.
Obviously the Groundhog, but also Ned Ryerson a little bit. Yeah. And, you know, you want some fries with that shake, I think was one of his lines. But he says to Joel, when we see the like outside of Joel's memory, he says, the only Valentine's I ever get are from my mother.
Mm-hmm.
When we go into Joel's memory, it's the first thing we see is we see that memory because we're way backwards. He says, the only Valentine's I ever got are from my mom.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like showing that subjectivity of Joel's memory right away, that like what we are seeing is not the fact and truth of what happened.
Exactly. It is like, he's an unreliable narrator. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And so even like, and it just in like right away, like that's the first thing you see is you see like a discrepancy between the real world and the memory world. It just puts everything else kind of unsteady. We're like, you're like, okay, well, did this fight happen? Or did this fight happen the way he said? Because there's things that are like, like there's, I feel like the line that really sticks with me is like when Joel, and he says it twice, he says like, that's like, you fucked someone, that's how you get that's how you get people to like you. It's just like such a nasty thing to say. And I'm like, did he actually say that? I mean, maybe. I guess he does say that in the recording, so I guess he does mean that. But there's just stuff that it's like, it's as you're watching this and you're like, oh, you're watching more of an unreliable narrator, that I really love that decision to put that slight. And you, a lot of people are probably, did you guys notice the mom mother thing, or was it just me?
I did.
Oh, okay. Oh, damn. Yeah. All right. I thought I was like, I was so proud of myself.
But it's true. It shows that memory is not perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. No one's memory is completely perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like, too, that we get early on, we get Rob and Carrie, the David Cross and...
Yeah.
When she's throwing the laundry at him, that always makes me laugh.
Yes. It's like that we're seeing another imperfect couple, and it's like, well, there is no... on the inside, there is no perfect couple. It's like, they're going to fight, and they get... Like, that's a pretty bad fight they get into. Also, I love that Carrie, I was like, why does she look so familiar? And then it was because... I looked her IMDb. Yes, and what I recognize her the most from is she is the doctor. She's the OBGYN in Father of the Bride 2.
I mean, to hit on your point there, Zach and Megan, we kind of talked about that last week with Revolutionary Road, where part of the whole theme of that movie is you're constantly staring at this house and this couple that seem to have this perfect relationship through the eyes of the David Harbour character, but once you go inside that house, it's chaos. It's fighting and it's arguments and it's nastiness. And it's like, no one's relationship is perfect, you know, but you like to think it is when you're looking at it from a distance. You know what I mean? Like, you can give yourself that distance.
Yeah, that's a good connection to last week.
Yeah, so I thought so. That's an interesting connection to last week because
whose suggestion was this from us? So we got this was an Alex O suggestion last week,
which is why he'll be leading off the feedback section.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's good. Okay, I like that. Alex says, you know, Kate Winslet finds a different way to leave a rocky relationship, which I like. He uses rocky. I feel like we get imagery of like rocks falling a lot.
Yeah,
even though it's like the house collapsing. Like on the seaside. So
I thought that not to jump too far ahead to title connection, but I thought something about Kate's house falling down could be the, you know, because her house metaphorically falls down in last week's episode. So,
yeah, you know, I like that.
Inside Kate's house, something like that.
Yeah, Megan, what else do you love about this movie? It's 5-star for you. I feel like we've heard why, but it doesn't work for Brendan. What about you?
I just think it just works like on all levels for me. I like the central relationship. I think that the character like Clem could be really, really irritating, but somehow she's not. I think, I don't know. I'm not sure why that is, actually. Kate Winslet does a good job, I guess.
Fucking actress, yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. And it's such a great cast. You think about this cast, right? It's Kate Winslet, star of the highest grossing movie of all time. Jim Carrey, who makes $20 million a movie. Elijah Wood, fresh off Lord of the Rings. Spider-Man 2 came out this same year for Kirsten Dunst. And then this is a pre-Avengers Mark Ruffalo.
This is Ruffalo still doing his, like, I'm not sure who I am in Hollywood.
I love young Mark Ruffalo. Like, he's so good in this. I really enjoyed him a lot in this.
Was this before or after Collateral?
Collateral was the same year, I think, right?
Same year. Uh-huh. Oh, well, okay, yeah.
Yeah, but in this, he's just like, I love that he feels like he could be a somebody in the Ghostbusters in this. Like,
yeah, that's
he's
true.
Got he's so that, like, the nerdy yeah. technician yeah. energy. And I really like him, the pairing of him and the Elijah Wood character, him and Patrick
yeah.
together.
Yeah.
As, like, the two technicians and how they're so different than each other and both, like, in love with people who have had these procedures done.
Yeah. Perfect. I also think, I think the Mary Kirsten Dunst storyline is good. Like, I think in a way that kind of balances out the fact that you don't really get Clem's perspective mm-hmm. very much. Because she's got the thing where she's obviously got the doctor on a pedestal. And R.I.P. Yep. Tom Wilkinson, he died just this year, I believe.
Yep, yep.
Yeah. And you kind of see, like, you see her perspective of that story and the sort of the pain. Yeah, I don't know. I like that. I think she's good in the role, too. And, yeah, I don't know. And
but just talking about Mary and Kirsten Dunst, like, she's significant in this because she's the one who says the title of the movie.
Yeah, she's very significant. I mean, she's the one who unravels the whole thing at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think, like, that also on kind of watching this the second time so quickly, like, that it doesn't take up a ton of the screen time, but just how important that is. And, like, just, like, showing another way that this, like, kind of this has nefariously been used, yeah. right? That, like, we don't yeah. know exactly what the relationship was. That she was in love with him? Was it that they had some sort of inappropriate relationship? Was it that he did something inappropriate to her? But then also when she's, before she finds out about that she had the procedure, and she's talking to Dr. Harold, I don't remember his last name. She's talking to him and she's saying, like, she's like, I just feel like I love you. You know, whatever she says, like, she says, like, deep down, she's like, loves him. And there's a look that Tom Wilkinson gives that's this look of, like, it's a disappointed look that you wouldn't expect from somebody finding out that somebody's in love with them, because it's like, this is his life's work. Like, oh, it works, but it doesn't actually work. Yeah. It doesn't work. Yeah. It
doesn't quite work.
There's only so far you can go with, like, mm-hmm. like, I mean, you know, I'm going to give an example. Like, you know, if my brother could have this done to, you know, a family member of ours that he has decided that he no longer wants in his life, I think he would. And the fact that, like, he can't stand to even have her name be brought up is, like, such a thing in our family. And it's like, but you can't completely erase someone from your life. Just because you don't want to have them in your life now doesn't mean that they were never a part of your life. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's a really interesting sci-fi concept that I actually do really love how this film thinks about that and thinks about memory mm-hmm. and, like, what it would cost and what it would mean to try to do something like this.
Yeah. Even, like, though it's not, totally practical. Like,
oh, no, it's 100%
not practical. You could poke tons of holes in it. Yeah.
It's 100% not practical. But, I mean, as we find going through Joel's memories, I mean, it's, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's, like, it's not practical that you would, like, they send the little card to people to say, like, don't ever bring up this person. Like,
memories.
Think about this movie nowadays. They'd have to scrub all your social media. Right?
Oh, yeah. Good luck with that.
I was going to say, I really like Michel Gondry's style. Like, he's directed a lot of music videos. Like, I'm trying to think of a good example. He did Dead Leaves and the Dirty Ground by the White Stripes, which has that projection thing that's very cool. So I think there's a lot of cool visual details in this movie that work really well. And just the way they did all the sort of practical effects are neat. Mm-hmm. You know, like,
I mean, a lot of the scenes could be music videos, like, just like take individual memories and you could put music to them and they could be music videos for sure.
Yeah, especially when they're jumping from memory to memory really quickly. Yeah. Like,
when he's under the table and she's, you know, the mom's friend and all that guy. It's just, you know, Little Joel. It's fun. It's a fun movie to watch.
Little Joel thing is so funny because
But I think one of her big complaints about one of Clem's big complaints about Joel is that you don't tell me things, you don't share with me. And so it's interesting because, you know, he's effectively doing that, taking her through all his repressed memories in his childhood. And he, you know, if that were really Clem, you know, she'd have learned more about him.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it's it because he's letting her in. So maybe on some level, like, the relationship will work better next time because this procedure maybe opened him up somehow. You know, that would be nice to think.
Who knows? One of the things I like about this too is the way that it ties memory and dreams together. I mean, everything feels like a dream, obviously, right? When we get like the weird parts of memory that we're going into, but it's done while, you know, he takes sleeping pills and he's in pajamas when he's getting the procedure done. Like, the first thing we see is Joel waking up. Like, there's scenes of them waking up together, them lying in bed. So like, we're getting, you know, we're getting kind of that like mix of dreams and memories. And it's almost like what this procedure is doing is it's making you dream these memories and then erasing them, sort of.
Yeah. I mean, I do like that a lot. Yeah. He mentions deja vu at one point in the film. Like, deja vu is that same sort of sensation almost where you're like, did this happen before? Or is this just like, that can be like a memory of a dream.
Which in the Matrix.
That feels familiar. That's what deja vu kind of is. It's like that feeling of familiarity that may actually have come from a dream. And now it's happening like in real life. Yeah. Like it's, you know.
Yeah. I think the movie also gets at something that I've wondered about, which is, okay, so if I'm under anesthetic, I don't remember what happened. But, like, okay, so I had my wisdom teeth out, and they put me under that, like, twilight sleep.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And when I came to, I was in the recovery room, and I said, how did I get here? And they said, you walked. I don't remember that at all.
Right.
So what I would love to know, like, what was my brain thinking while I was having my wisdom teeth out, you know? And so, like, it's kind of interesting, this movie, like, the head Joel is what your brain is thinking while you're drugged or whatever. I wonder if that was part of the way Charlie Kaufman came up with this idea that, you know, maybe he had surgery or something and was like, what was my brain?
Well, and I think two things on that. One is that we get like much like if you fall asleep watching TV or you fall asleep with music on, like you get the external things coming into the dreams, which we had that with Inception as well. And so when Patrick is talking, like that's what kind of pulls him out of it is because Clementine calls Patrick and he hears Clementine's voice while this, like, that's what ultimately like, screws everything up. I mean, it doesn't end up screwing, but what makes it more difficult, right? Because of a more difficult procedure. So there's like that aspect, which again ties to the dreams component, but we also get Dr. Harold says, you know, and this line actually made me, this is one of the only, like, I didn't think there was a lot of funny stuff, like, ha-ha funny stuff in this movie, but the line where he says, technically speaking, the procedure is brain damage, is on par with a night of heavy drinking.
Yeah.
And then when you talked about being on Twilight, I think about, like, getting blackout drunk, and you get, like, your body
you don't remember home. The Uber ride home.
Right. Yeah. You got home, you opened your home. Door, you got
you made it to your bed.
Yeah, it's true.
But I have no memory of getting from.
Weird.
Yeah. It's kind of how that works. Yeah, it's kind of
wild. Yeah.
And not, I really not so, that, you know.
Yeah, you did these things, Lynn.
Like, did I?
Yeah.
And to go back to Tom Wilkinson. So I just I really like the dream version of the doctor, the way he talks. Oh, he's so like matter of fact, like, well, yes, I guess that would make sense. He's really good. He was a good actor.
He's very good. Yeah. I like Tom Wilkinson a lot.
Yeah.
I have one Tom Wilkinson connection written down if we get to it, but yes. Yeah, he's very good in this. I like him a lot. Especially like because he, you know, like during those dream bleed scenes, like he's also like willing to play with the weirdness of it, which you wouldn't expect because he's sort of a more serious actor.
Yeah.
So
it's interesting casting.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Does Joel always sleep on a pull-out couch?
It Good seems question. Like it. I think he's a like small it. Apartment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause
yeah.
There's just like those are some of those little details that like he gets up and he's like it's a pull-out couch that he's been sleeping on this whole time and like that he goes and I do want to talk about the whole alcohol component of this. I know we just talked about like being blackout
lots of
drunk,
wine, lots of whiskey,
there's a lot of there's stuff about Clementine's drinking, right? That she gets the car accident and she wants, like, we see her drink like almost as soon as we meet her in like the flash forward that we get at the the cold open at the beginning. You know, they're drinking, like, they're partying around Joel.
There's the Chinese food restaurant, too, when they're having, like, the dumplings and the noodles. And he's
the beer.
She's like, oh, I'm going to have this beer. And he's like, oh, so she's about to get drunk. Great. Yeah, when they're at the Chinese restaurant and she just takes the beer and all that. And then we have, like, the whole thing with going into the house on the beach. And the first thing she looks for is the liquor cabinet. like in the kitchen, you know, and I'm sure that there were not as many wine glasses in reality as there are in Joel's memory of that.
That was a lot of wine glasses.
But that was a lot of freaking wine glasses lining that wall.
David so, and like, Ruth must be very rich.
Yeah. So that, like, see, that, like, shows how, like, your memory, like, can exaggerate things in your memory, like, to make room for, like, explaining someone's behavior. You know what I mean?
I mean, do you think that in reality, Clementine was as, like, is it that Joel's memory is that she's an alcoholic, or is that that's actually her behavior, that she drinks, like, she's showing alcoholic behavior in my mind?
Who knows?
Who knows? And that's the thing, is we don't know enough about her reality to know for sure. Because I don't think we see her drink at all in the real side of things, right, with Patrick.
I mean, when they, at the beginning, she makes him a drink when they go back to her place after they're, when they get off the train. But, that didn't seem that crazy to me.
Yeah, I don't think that was, like, an inappropriate, it wasn't, like, first thing in the morning.
No, that was,
Yeah, and I did like that when Joel pulls out the empty bottle, the whiskey bottle for her, like, when they come back.
Yeah.
After they're, like, they're, like, redate. Yeah, I thought there was more. Like, that's just, like, another one of those fun details, I think. And I think, like, from kind of a Linklater perspective, too, this movie gets into the time is fleeting component, right? Like, when having that, like, when we get their first date, and Joel knows that things are being erased around him and Clementine are talking.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he says, it's going to be gone soon. What do we do? And Clementine says, we enjoy it. And they go run on the beach and they, like, have this great time. And it's like, I think, like, that's another thing when you're talking about a movie that's about breakup. And if you're, you know, I think this is a movie that, like, you could watch this after a breakup. And I think it helps you kind of rationalize some of the things and kind of think about how you're feeling. But I think it also makes you, like, it would make you sad because we're after a pet loss, right? You think of, like, the good times that are, those are gone.
Do you want to dwell? Yeah. Which side do you want to live in? Do you want to dwell in the bad times or remember the good times? And I think that the answer this movie has, which I like, is that it's important to hold both close. It's important to hold the good and the bad memories. You know what I mean?
And don't let the bad ruin the good.
Exactly. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, it did take me, like, over 10 years before I got another dog after my dog died, because it was so hard. It's difficult. It's difficult going through this kind of thing and opening yourself up again.
Yeah,
for sure.
I think, like, it's, you know, this is a movie about dealing with loss. Really, like, at its core, this is what this movie is about. And I think, like, especially having watched more Charlie Kaufman movies that he's made, and just kind of the way he approaches relationships and loss. I know we did, I'm thinking of Ending Things, which I think has a lot of thematic similarities. I watched this movie in 2020 and movie laddered on my personal movie ladder too. I'm thinking of Ending Things from this. So, you know, that is not one that we can do next week.
Visually. It's very similar visually in the way that it jumps from space to space and plays with time and memory in very similar ways.
I mean, I think I personally would say this is his best movie of the ones I've seen, and I haven't seen all of them. But I mean, I like Being John Malkovich a fair bit, and I enjoyed Adaptation. I did not care for I'm Thinking of Ending Things at all.
Did you give us a score on that one? I don't recall.
I don't know. I think I gave it 1 star. I really didn't like it.
I actually happen to have that doc up because this movie was suggested off it. Megan, you suggested this off of I'm Thinking of Ending Things.
Well,
another reason I'm excited to watch I'm Thinking of Ending Things is that this beautiful Charlie Kaufman films is one of my favorites of all time, Eternal Sunshine. Another reason I was excited to watch it. And Megan, you gave I'm Thinking of Ending Things 1 star. You said, I hated this, real slog to get through. I stuck with it out of the hope that it would at least have an interesting ending, and it did not.
No. Aww.
That movie sucked.
I think I liked that movie, didn't I? I think I really liked that movie.
I think my memory of it is that it made more sense. I did like it more the second time than the first time, but it is one of those that I felt like was kind of weird for the sake of weird. Other times this movie's come up. We'll just talk about this now. Connor Walsh suggested this off of episode 14, The Brothers Bloom, because of Mark Ruffalo. was the connection there. Episode 16, Memento. That makes a lot of sense. Av suggested this. This was when Av was still co-hosting with us. Mm-hmm. Movie dealing with memory. Brendan, you suggested this off of 500 Days of Summer.
Relationship. That makes sense. Comment.
Yeah. I think, not to spoil it, but I think that's the Letterboxd point.
Yeah, I think it is.
I looked it up, and it was something we had done already.
Yeah.
Taylor Cotter suggested this off of Edge of Tomorrow, back when we did that.
Also makes sense, okay. Yeah,
kind of reliving things.
Yeah.
Megan, you suggested this off of The Notebook.
Also makes sense. They came out the same year, right?
Yeah.
Kind of wild.
I was thinking a lot about the ending of The Notebook during this film as well. Yeah.
So Megan, you and Stefan both suggested this off of Vanilla Sky, where the action takes place. You said the action takes place inside somebody's head. Stefan said Dreamlike Love Story. Secret Life of Walter Mitty, Alex O. Suggested
That's
it.
That's a good suggestion.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I was thinking a lot about Secret Life of Walter Mitty. It's probably going to be my movie map. Well, maybe. There's a lot of contenders for movie map. Ron suggested this off of Inception. And that's it. That's all the ones that's come
up. As far as what our score was back in 2022, Zach, you gave it a 2.5. I gave it a 4. And the listener average was a 2.929. It ended up pretty low in our overall listener rankings, but you give it a 2.5, I give it a 4. So I liked that movie a lot more than you did.
Yeah. Nice. Megan, you are right. The Letterboxd point is 500 Days of Summer. So it's always good when there's no chance of us getting the Letterboxd point because we've already done it. I am very happy to see that we are watching this on the 20-year, like almost exactly on the 20-year. I think that's happened a couple times where we've just like stumbled on to watching something.
It has.
On the anniversary.
It happened a lot last year, actually. Yeah.
That's not
how I remember it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would you guys get this procedure done if you had like a traumatic memory, a loss, a death of somebody?
Come on, Dan.
I don't even have any tattoos. I don't do like major body modification. No. And I think you can't. You can't. Your memories shape who you are, even if you don't remember them accurately.
I've had enough procedures done in my lifetime. I don't need this one. I'm good.
You don't need the memory.
I do a good enough job forgetting minor details about my life on my own.
I'll just wait till I get old.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm already forgetting things.
Yeah.
So it's cool. You know,
Brendan, if we get to a point where we can't think of another movie to do on this podcast, do you want to get this procedure done and then we can start back over?
Yes,
with Fargo?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
I think that's a good idea. All right.
We should have a spotless mind rule where if somebody accidentally suggests this again after we've already done it, then we automatically have to do it.
Whoa. Right.
We have to forget that we already did this. We have to forget that we already recorded this podcast and we have to do it.
What about, we could do that with Memento as well.
I guess I
do have one other question. Megan, you're smarter and more well-read than us. Yes.
This is true. I have no argument.
Do you understand the like significance of like the Pope Alexander? Alexander Pope.
Or Nietzsche.
That was pretty funny. Do you understand the quote where the title comes from, though? Like what the significance is besides it being like a nice poem?
I don't remember it. I'm Googling.
It was something about, I should have pulled it up. It was something about like happiness and like,
hang on. Let me just, how happy is the aimless Vestal's lot, the world forgetting by the world forgot, eternal sunshine of the spotless mind, each prayer accepted and each wish resigned. Okay. So a Vestal virgin is the, person who cares for the shrine of Vesta in ancient Rome. So they're like nuns kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, I think people weren't supposed to talk to them. But eternal sunshine of the spotless mind. Yeah, I guess because they don't sin. I don't know. I don't know what poem this is from. Hang on. Alexander Pope. Yeah. Eloisa to Abelard, it says. Okay. And that's that's a romance, right? Isn't that like where they talk through the wall?
Yeah, I don't know. You tell us.
I think that's right. Hang on, I'm Googling again.
Well, and I do think, like, as you're looking that up, I do love,
it's a good metaphor.
Like, again, when we're talking about like memory and minds and things like that, like that Mary in her head was like, I am going to say Pope or Alexander Pope, not Pope Alexander. And like, no, what she ends up, like, she's still like, despite telling herself to say it right, she still says it wrong. Oh. Like, I think, like, again, like, I like what that's saying.
Okay, you know what? This is actually really interesting about Eloisa to Abelard. I should have looked this up for my one last thing, but this says, the poem by Pope is an imitation of a Latin poetic genre, and its immediate fame resulted in a large number of English imitations throughout the rest of the century, and other poems more loosely based on its themes thereafter. So, it's like the memory, right? It gets redone and corrupted.
Yep.
That's interesting. I bet Charlie Kaufman knew that. But I think, there's like a whole section in Wikipedia about imitations of, so it's from 1717. But yeah, they're the ones who talk through the wall, right?
Yeah, we'll say that's right.
Okay. Maybe.
Do you like it? Do you like this as a title?
I do. Like, I think it's a great title, actually. I really like it. Mm-hmm. It's just, there's something appealing about this combination of words.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like, yes, it's a long title, but it kind of, like, the fact that the title is maybe a bit confusing kind of suits the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's very memorable too. Everybody knows. You don't even have to say the full title. You can just say Eternal Sunshine.
Yeah, everybody knows Eternal Sunshine.
Yeah. It's I do like it a lot. I was thinking about that earlier. Hang on, nice. I'm Googling Lovers Talk Through Wall.
All right. Well, while you do that, let me do the box office.
Pyramus and Thisbe. Oh, I'm so sorry. I was wrong.
Oh, no, that's all right. I'm sure you've been corrected.
I think it was the Bene Gesserit. The Bene Gesserit are the ones who talk through walls.
Yes. That does sound right. They use the voice, I believe.
Use the voice.
Yeah. All right. Well, this movie came out in... Anybody have anything else before we go to feedback?
No, I think we're good.
Okay. Movie came out, as we said, March 19th, 2004, day after my birthday. Almost 20 years ago, it had its premiere on March 9th in L.A., It debuted at number 7 in the box office. So despite this great cast, I guess I'd probably like the heavier.
Well, it's an indie movie.
It's a weird movie, There was no A24 proper movies like this up at that time.
That's actually, you know, yes.
Focus features.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So number one movie at the box office, Dawn of the Dead, Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead.
Okay. That's a good Dawn of the Dead movie. It's a good Dead movie.
It's actually pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah.
It displaced a movie that had been number one at the box office for 4 weeks, Passion of the Christ.
Okay, that's a good replacement.
Yeah.
Really funny that Dawn of the Dead
actually
replaced.
Is really funny.
Yeah, it is. That is a good, like, that's a fun, like, really bar fact.
That's almost like it was intentional.
I know, right? Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Number three also coming out this week was Taking Lives, which I think is Jennifer Lopez.
I thought it was, is it Angelina Jolie?
I have no idea what that is.
I don't know.
It's like one of those, like, crappy, it's an FBI profiler is called in by French Canadian police to catch a serial killer.
So that's, it is Angelina Jolie then. I saw that movie.
Okay. Starsky and Hutch is in theaters at the time. Secret Window, Hidalgo. A movie I just want to point out, at number 9, a movie that actually could be a connection to next week, a suggestion for next week, 51st Dates.
Yes, I noticed that. I thought that's really interesting that The Notebook, 51st Dates, and Eternal Sunshine all came out in the same year.
Yeah.
I'm just looking to see if there's anything else that we've done on this podcast. I don't think there's anything else really that we've done on this podcast that is in the... nothing in the top 40 that we've done. So this weekend, not yet. I don't know when the notebook you would think would have come out in February of 2004.
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I would have guessed it was a summer movie.
Yeah, maybe you're right. June 25th, 2004. Okay. You're right. Okay. Okay, cool. Summer. All right. Well, getting into feedback, Alex O, the suggester, kicks things off and says, the perfect Valentine's movie. And timely with Kate Winslet's new show airing. Yes, I did. Did any of you watch The Regime?
I have not watched The Regime yet. But we didn't mention it last week. But yeah, it premiered on Sunday. Kate Winslet's new show on Max.
Some of the people who worked on Succession on that show. I know Jim watched it.
Yeah. Apparently the tone is similar to Death of Stalin.
Jim seemed like he thought it was okay. He didn't say it was like amazing, like rush out and watch it, but it's not. But I do think it's like I meant to get to it before this, since we are doing back-to-back Kate Winslet weeks, and I just I didn't get around to it. So,
yeah.
All right, this has long been a favorite movie among myself and some friends, to the point where one of them even has a Meet Me in Montauk tattoo.
Aww.
Winslet and Carrie are both fantastic, and the staff of Lacuna are all so gross, but also real.
Oh, yeah.
Dunst and Ruffalo really shine, and Elijah Wood and Tom Wilkinson are so skeevy and awful in their own ways.
Yep. Yeah, we didn't really talk much about the Elijah Wood pretending to be
it's Joel so gross
aspect. Mm-hmm. Where he's,
yeah,
like, taking Joel's memories and using them to, like, try to woo Clementine. Mm-hmm. It's so skeevy. I absolutely love it.
He's a predator.
Frodo, yeah. No!
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a little over the top that he says that he, like, stole her underwear.
That's very true.
It's like, we didn't need that to know that this guy was a creep. They could have done it without.
Like the visual when they're in the library and Joel is in the memory is trying to turn him around and he can't. And he keeps
there's also the Tom Wilkinson's, the Dr. Harold's face, like his face, is like, it's like obscure.
It's all very good,
because,
yeah.
And they say it's because he's in a memory that's already been erased. And that's why he can't see the face. I do think, like, what is the name of Ruffalo's character? Stan.
Stan
Fink.
Stan the man.
I do like that, like, him and Mary, like, their kind of budding romance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love when they're
and
jumping
he says
up and
that
down
he didn't
half
work
naked
on her procedure. Do you believe that he didn't work on her procedure?
I believe him. Yeah.
I think Stan
him
is a good guy.
I believe it's Stan.
Out of all these people, I mean, I think Mary and Stan are okay people. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think so too. I really love the part where they're jumping up and down half naked on this bed because they're just getting drunk and high. And it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things on Peacock is it says that this movie has graphic nudity, like on the warning when I started the movie. Hmm. And I was like, I don't remember graphic nudity. And there's besides the scene Joel gets caught by his mom, like, and he's looking at the cartoon.
Which is not
porn.
Nudity.
Yeah, that's not nudity. That's just.
Oh, I guess the cartoon, I suppose.
The cartoon, right. I was like, are they kind of that, like, literal as graphic nudity? Like,
you kind of almost see Mark Ruffalo's butt.
Yeah.
That's it, really.
Yeah.
His tidy. You know. I do like him in the tidy whiteys with, like, the bottled frame glasses. Like,
the glasses are a good look for him.
It's so funny. Yeah. It's like, there's Bruce Banner. Yeah.
All right. Going back to Alex's feedback, the practical and special effects all hold up so incredibly well, and the script does such an intelligent job of balancing Joel's memories with discussions on the ongoing erasure of them. And somehow it does all of this in less than 2 hours. Some people think that the end of the film is sweet as they find each other again. I have always felt the opposite, that with Clementine's erratic behavior and vulnerability and Joel's condescension and self-loathing, they're destined to repeat the same things as before, just like Mary and Howard do, but maybe with slightly more brain damage. But maybe you both feel differently. You three.
In
any case, this is a strong 5 out of 5 from Alexo.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. See, I definitely think that they, you know, and maybe as we said at the very beginning, I think maybe that's the point, is that they are destined to fall apart again. And that's, you know,
I think
maybe that's
point,
okay.
I think, yeah, I think the point is that they're willing to try.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that they're willing to do it without this, like, interference from the erased memories.
And if it doesn't work out, then they accept that.
Yep.
And, you know,
that's good. New memories.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's interesting that we never see, what is her name, Laura? Lois?
Naomi?
Naomi.
The
first couple of Lois?
Yeah. The girlfriend that doesn't come to the beach, and that's how we end up meeting Clementine. Yeah. Like, we never see her.
I feel like remember reading that there was, like, a scene that was deleted or something. I could be making this up.
Erased,
though.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it might be a false memory that's been implanted.
Mm. I like not having her.
I like that
she's also been deleted, right? Like, from his memory, like, even though she's,
well,
she
looms
large because he talks about, like, I should go back to, maybe I should meet her again. Like, he's longing for her. Even after the procedure, he's longing for this past relationship.
Mm-hmm. Ron writes it says, normally I can't stand Jim Carrey, but he surely nails this performance here. Such a beautiful tragedy. 5 stars from Ron. So there you go.
Yeah, I agree.
To go back, Brendan, you were talking about you didn't like Jim Carrey in this role at the beginning. And one thing I really like is I like his physicality. I like how big, like, he's
how
not like, you know, usually he's rubber face, right? He's a very physical actor. Right. But in this, he's... like, his arms are so long, his torso is so, like, he's just, like,
his
a big
so
guy. Long,
yeah.
It's just, I don't know. I think his physicality works really well in this movie.
He's taller than Leo, probably, to call back to last week.
Probably.
Yeah. That could be our title connection, taller than Leo. Leo with a taller man, or Kate with a taller man. All right. Travis continues us, and he says, I was a little disappointed with this movie, considering the hype. The plot was interesting, but a little confusing at points. I just did not buy the Carrie Winslet romance. I also think Young Ruffalo's performance was weak. I was impressed with Dunst and Wilkinson. 3.5 stars. So Travis on the other side.
From I agree with the first half of that, not the Ruffalo part.
Yeah, I he's
you
so
have
funny.
Me, you had me in the first half, not going to lie.
Yeah.
Robbie writes it and says, revisiting this for the first time, I remember enjoying this in my first watch, but not coming away thinking it was as good as others have told me. On this watch, I came away liking this a lot more. I think on the first watch, a few things got past me, and with this movie being semi-complex, I don't think I fully got the grasp of everything going on the first time. I really enjoy Carrie's performance in this. 4.5 stars for Robbie. So yeah, Robbie is, you know, Robbie is, you know, a proponent of maybe you need multiple times to watch a movie to get everything it's going for. I think that that's, I think that's fair. Yeah.
People very split on Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just wait. This is, I think, my fourth time, not counting, like, I guess fifth, because I watched it twice yesterday. So I watched it in theaters when it came out. I did actually watch this shortly after a breakup I had in college. I don't know if it was productive or not to do that. I then watched this. I might have revisited it in between, but I know I watched it again in 2020 because I did log it on Letterboxd. I actually totally forgot I watched this as part of my personal movie ladder. And my review on Letterboxd I wrote was, I said I'm a lot lower on this than I was in college. Like, I like it, but I don't think it's as, like, amazing as I did when I was in college. And now on this watch, I'm, like, back up higher again on it. So it's interesting how over time my opinion of this has changed. But I think, like, there's a movie on my list that I didn't like the first time, did like the second time, that is kind of a similar, like, headier romance concept that I think sometimes just, you know, watch movies multiple times. It's good.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it better for a film to live on in your memory? And not
great question. It? Yeah, I know some people are like, vehemently will not rewatch movies. They say, watched, like, A, there's rather, enough stuff I want to see. And yeah, I've watched it. I know Sammy Chester.
I'd rather have my memory movies. Of the film. And
yeah.
It depends on the movie.
Well, this that's one fair. Seems to advocate for doing it again, because we do see them try again at the end.
So. Yeah, that's true.
All right. Olin doesn't close us out, but Olin is our next email, and Olin says, wish someone could erase this memory of this film from my mind, though that would run the risk of me watching it again, I guess.
That's good.
Two Charlie Kaufman films. I think I get his shtick now. Not really for me. Kate Winslet, excellent as usual, and the supporting cast were decent. Jim Carrey, not great, though. Not sure how bad he was. Just find him distracting, as I keep expecting to burst out with an alrighty most of the time. It's alrighty then.
Yeah, alrighty then.
1.5 stars from Olin.
See, that's interesting, and that gets back to, like, the whole, you know, comedic actors trying to do dramatic work, and is it distracting? Because, like, there's a, you know, we talked about 50 First Dates. You know, Adam Sandler went through a similar career trajectory where he was doing all these ridiculous comedies. Then he starts trying to do more serious things, and some of it worked and some of it didn't. Some of it works for Jim Carrey and some of it doesn't. And I think that, like, I think it's unfair to get hung up on just one role, one famous role that an actor had. But I understand why it's hard to divorce your memory from their most iconic, like, memeable phrase or role, you know what I mean? So it's, like, it's, how do you divorce yourself from that and just watch an actor who's acting and not think about, like, all their past roles when you're watching it, you know? It can be hard.
Yeah. I like Ace Ventura, and I like Joel from Eternal Sunshine.
Yeah,
To me, it doesn't. I mean, I know it's the same person. I don't see Ace Ventura when I watch.
He's very different.
So I think there's an actor in my mind, and I can't think of who it is. It's somebody I've watched recently who, like, was started in comedy and moved to drama, and it's, like, been, you know, it's seamless. Like, there's some actors it's very seamless. I do think that Jim Carrey is kind of a weird one, where he's had this career trajectory Yeah. It's just like very strange. Like, what is the last like great thing he was in? Am I forgetting something? Like, I feel like he's just like Lemony Snicket's now, which I know isn't accurate, but I guess he's like he's gone back to like Silly, right? Because he's Dr. Robotnik now in the Sonic movies.
That's very true. Yeah. Which I haven't seen any of the Sonics. We could be doing those
yet.
Yet, yes, indeed. All right, the great Professor Jim Crumley writes in and says, "Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind hit hard this time. Whatever happened to this version of Jim Carrey? I hope that he has a third act coming. Plus, Mark Ruffalo and Elijah Wood are so good as twerps. Kate Winslet may have the best performance of the film, and Kirsten Dunst does a lot with such a slight role. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind hit hard this time. Whatever happened to this version of Jim Carrey? I hope that he has a third act coming. Plus, Mark Ruffalo and Elijah Wood are so good as twerps. Kate Winslet may have the best performance of the film, and Kirsten Dunst does a lot with a slight role. I wonder how well this movie's datedness will land now. What fraction of Ladder listeners know Huckleberry Hound? Rating 5 out of 5. MVP Michelle Gondry for getting the most of this trippy greatness that is Charlie Kaufman. So there we go. Mm-hmm. He did actually write in 2 versions of this geek back. I included both for the comedy. So
and you were trying to make us think we were going insane.
Exactly. Yes. So I decided not to erase the first draft from the memory bank and instead included both. So there you go.
Oh, that's funny. Did he know he sent in 2 versions?
He did know he sent in 2. Yeah, he knew he sent in 2 drafts. So.
Oh, okay, he did it.
He forgot the Huckleberry Hound bit with the first draft.
Okay.
So yeah, I remember the name Huckleberry Hound, but I forgot that he was the dog that sang "Oh My God, Darwin Clementine." Like I remember Huckleberry Hound from my youth and the Hanna-Barbera cartoons, but I didn't remember the "Oh My Darling Clementine" was his bit.
I don't think I'd ever heard of Huckleberry Hound. Maybe we don't have it in Canada. I don't know.
You didn't have Hanna-Barbera cartoons?
No. Jim Carrey is Canadian.
This is true.
But he did know Huckleberry Hound originally. It's just that was erased because he knew Huckleberry. Like that was, which is
exactly.
Interesting
He's
thing
the
because...
one that put Huckleberry Hound in the memory. Yeah.
Right. Well, in that he knew Huckleberry Hound when they met, and she's like, "Can I borrow that chicken?" Which I thought was really funny, but that's like you asked to borrow the chicken. But that he knew that before meeting her.
Exactly.
And then erasing those memories had like a viral
like a ripple
impact.
Effect. Yes. Like a butterfly
ripple effect.
There's no Clementine. He probably couldn't eat a Clementine orange either.
Yeah.
Do you think that Jim Carrey, when he read the script, had to be like, "What's Huckleberry Hound? We don't have that in Canada." Or maybe it's for older people.
I think it's for older people. I also, and we didn't bring this up, but I do think, like, I love that Clementine's hair changes to, like,
all the time
period. So it kind of helps you keep track of where they are time period-wise based on what color her hair is.
Yeah, I do like that.
Especially when we're in the present, when we're in her, like, relationship with Patrick versus in memories as
blue.
Well.
I think Kate Winslet rocks the different colored hair.
She does it well,
Yeah.
Ancient Orange and Blue Ruin. Yep, Blue Ruin. I thought about Blue Ruin. Yeah, I thought about that for next week. So.
That'd be wild. All right, and your brother also says one of his favorite movies ever, 5 out of 5. That's going to be 4.21 overall from the listeners, thanks to the one lone tank score. But it is
true. Yeah, I guess Owen was the only really low score for the listeners.
Correct. Yeah, everybody else was a 3.5 or higher. So.
Nice.
Man.
Yeah.
Well, there's no suspense, Megan. Do you want to just do yours? Maybe there's suspense. Yeah. Are you lower
on the
suspense?
I'm still going to give it 5 stars. No, I think it's a great movie. I really thoroughly enjoyed watching it again last night. I didn't take a lot of notes, but I was like, you know, I feel like I remember this movie pretty well. Well, maybe I was deceiving myself. I don't know. But yeah, I don't. I just think it's a fun movie to watch. It's also like emotional. The performances are really good. Visually, it's great. Should have been nominated for Best Picture that year, in my opinion.
Wow.
I think Jim Carrey should have been nominated too, actually. And I just love this movie. I think it's great.
We didn't talk about Oscar stuff, but it was nominated. Was it
Best Actress?
Best Actress.
And it won Best Original Screenplay.
Screenplay for Kaufman, yeah.
Because this is like, you know, they often give Best Original Screenplay to like an indie movie.
Yeah, to something that's not going to get.
Yeah, we're going
to
throw you a bone here.
Exactly.
Like, yes. I think didn't Lost in Translation also win? I think so.
It did. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, if I were to redo the Oscars from that year, I can tell you, you know, I would still have nominated The Aviator. Mm-hmm. And
which we've done, obviously, with you.
Yes. And but I would have given Spider-Man 2 the Best Picture nomination.
Whoa.
Because Spider-Man 2 is fucking great.
It is pretty great.
Yes. And I would have dumped Sideways and Ray from the Best Picture. Yep. Category.
You doing all this from memory?
I thought about this a lot.
Oh,
I would definitely jump Sideways. I'm not a Sideways guy.
Sideways like kind of sucks, and like Ray is fine, but it's mostly about the performance. I think
it's a biopic. Yeah, it's
I would jump Finding Neverland because I did not like that movie when I saw it.
See, I liked Finding Neverland, and I think like Million Dollar Baby is like fine, whatever. I think it's a good movie actually. I do. I wouldn't be, you know, I would kick out Sideways and Ray much before I'd kick out Million Dollar Baby. So, but you know, Hilary Swank, that was her second Oscar. Yeah. It's like, does Hilary Swank need to be a 2-time Oscar winner? I'm not sure.
All right.
Yes. Okay. Well, I'm glad that we kept Oscar month alive. Getting that Oscars in. I will go next. Cause I feel like Brendan, there's the most suspense with you. I'm not a 5. I'm like, I feel like there is a version of this movie that is a 5. And there's a version of like there's a version of watching this movie for me that's a 5.
Interesting.
But I do think like this movie does so much great. It's just, it's missing that little something to push it to the 5. So this is a 4.5. It's probably like 4.74 if we're being honest. Like, this movie is really great. I want to give it a 5. I don't know. I can't say why I can't give it a 5. It might be that like little bit in the middle where it drags a little bit for me, but I don't know. Just missing something. So it's 4.5 for me. Yeah, that's where I am.
Nice.
Fair enough.
I will say that I appreciate that this movie is under 2 hours. It's tight. It's well constructed.
Damning with faint praise.
No, I'm just, there are things that don't work for me, and I know that that's a barrier for entry kind of thing, and it's maybe next time I watch it, when we have our minds erased and we redo this, I will like it more.
Yeah, maybe you'll get past it.
Maybe I'll get past it on a second, third, fourth watch. But I'm sorry, Megan, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, the first time I saw the movie Up, you know, the cartoon?
Yeah.
I was like, this is so unbelievable. This guy could never carry his house on his back. And for whatever, I know it's a cartoon, for whatever reason, that couldn't really prevented me from enjoying the movie. But then the second time I watched it, I was like, no, this is very lovely. What's wrong with me? So maybe in the future you will, you know, somehow get over that mental block.
Classic. Yeah, and I think that can be a memory thing. You know, but there's a lot in this movie that does work. I don't think it's a bad movie. I think it's well constructed. I think that the sci-fi idea is really, really cool, and visually they play with it really, really well. I just think that there is a fundamental issue with the central relationship that a lot of people probably think is on purpose, but it wasn't working for me. So for that, I have to give it I still had a really good time watching it, but it's not perfect. I got to give it a 3.5. I'm like, it's not a bad movie. I can't give it like average, but there's not enough there to put it in that 4-5 range for me. So I'm going to land at a 3.5.
Just even like they said, you'd rewatch it, which should make it a 4.
Well, that's my rating scale.
I know.
So I
do also want to call out, this movie was the runner up in the Film Spotting 2019 Best of the 2000s bracket.
Wow.
What one?
There Will Be Blood.
Which we've done.
Oh, yeah.
Third place movie. Yeah, Brennan, you really must have hated that finals. And the third place
mad.
Movie was No Country for Old Men was the third place.
Yeah, because that was what I took to win it all, was No Country.
I just was pulling up the bracket to see. Eternal Sunshine beat Mulholland Drive.
Interesting.
Oh, no, sorry. It beat No Country for Old Men in the Final Four. There Will Be Blood beat Fellowship. So I feel like there was, in 2019, Brendan was big mad that There Will Be Blood beat Fellowship and Eternal Sunshine beat No Country. I'm sure you were not happy.
How dare you? All right, so it's going to be a 4.3, which will bump up to a 4.5 for Letterboxd.
Nice.
So there you go. You still get your mostly high score.
Yep. Okay, great. You and Travis can hang out in the 3.5 club.
Yeah,
together.
Exactly. I like Travis. Okay.
Yeah. There you go.
Travis. All is right. Cool.
Well, speaking of people you like, Brendan, who's your hero of the movie?
I got to give it to Charlie Kaufman. I mean, he won Best Original Screenplay for this. Right. I think that the ideas that he's going for in this work really well. It's so weird sci-fi without being like crazy futuristic sci-fi. It's like right on the border of
that's true.
Like fun, like modern sci-fi.
It's like lo-fi sci-fi.
It's lo-fi sci-fi. Yes, thank you. Yes.
Did I just coin that term? Probably
I think
not.
He did.
Oh wow.
Awesome. Probably not. But yeah, I got to give it to Charlie.
I got some lo-fi sci-fi on my list for next week.
Gonna give it to Charlie. Can I call him Chuck Kaufman?
No, sure. You can call him Donald Kaufman.
No, I would not.
All right.
Hey, go ahead, Zach.
All right, I will go next. I'm going to give it to Mary / Kate Winslet. Or, sorry, Kirsten Dunst.
That's definitely not Kate Winslet.
Yeah, Kirsten Dunst. I got the two names. Yeah,
she is kind of the hero.
I was going to say Alexander Pope this whole time, and then I said Pope Alexander. yes, Kirsten Dunst / Mary is my hero of the movie. I think what she represents in this so much, like she does like talk about packing a lot in a small, you know, like few lines.
Yeah.
I think what she represents is like somebody who's already gone through this and is dealing with the after effects, the lingering, that lingering longing. She also says the title of the movie, which like I feel like that. You should get some sort of points for saying the title of the movie in the movie.
Connection last week with the Liam pointing gif.
Yeah, exactly. you know, same year she's going to be in Spider-Man 2, which, you know, people big say year. Is good. Yeah, big year for her. I do think, like, it's, I love, like, the little details in this. I love, like, and she represents the little details in this movie.
Oh, Mary and Spider-Man, too.
I love that she gives everybody the cassette tape at the end, and there's a lot of cassette tapes that pop up in this movie, and cassette tapes representing past relationships, like you give somebody a mixtape. I mean, again, this is a little data, but you give somebody a mixtape.
You can tape over it.
Yep, it can be erased.
Oh, I like that. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice. So I let her walking out with the box of all the cassette tapes and mailing it to people and being like the whistleblower. It, like I just think she does so much.
It's kind of cool that where she's, you know, she's standing there with her box talking to Stan, and then it's really subtle how like he doesn't notice the other boxes in her car, but and then we see that her box is like her car is
it's
full
boxes.
Of boxes.
Yeah, it's all
and it's just a little moment. It's well done.
I think that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's another question. If you had this done, which I know you guys said you wouldn't do this. Would you want to know? Would you want to receive that?
Well, but I think, I mean, like you obviously open yourself up to all kinds of abuse. If you let someone mess with your memory, like Kate Winslet is being abused by Patrick, and then like Kirsten Dunst, the wife when Howard's wife comes up and he says, she says, "Don't be a monster, Howard. Tell the poor girl," you know, and it's like it's horrible. It's really.
You can tell, like, Howard's wife has gone through this multiple times.
You can definitely tell that,
He's probably done this to multiple girls.
Yeah.
Like, Howard, maybe. The doctor, has probably done this to multiple girls.
Very possible. Yeah. I mean, it's, you really, it's, you know, you shouldn't let someone mess with you.
I think in like a post Me Too world, the Howard character comes off as much more of a predator. Like I think there's a read on this where it's just like she was in love with him and she asked him to do it because she didn't want to.
But then when you hear the tape, she's like, "Oh, I can't go through with it," and he goes, "We agreed this was for the best." And it's clear, like it's so a power thing. Power. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I always thought he was a scumbag, even in 2004.
I think that's that makes sense.
Not as scummy as Patrick, but
so he's not going to be your hero of the movie. I'm assuming.
No, probably. Although Tom Wilkinson did a good job. But I don't know. I'm not sure. Maybe I'll give it to Kate Winslet. I gave it to Kate Winslet last week. So, you know, give her two in a row.
Eight wins.
She has the connection.
And I enjoy performance. Like I said, I think this character could be very, very irritating in different situations. And she manages to make her likable. So, good job, Kate Winslet. She's one of my faves. I like her.
Speaking of Kate Winslet. connections to last week. So obviously we got Kate Winslet, we've got a Rocky relationship, which I think was what Alex said, something about Rocky. We've got the fight, like we do have like a domestic fight, right, in the apartment.
Big domestic fighting. Many domestic fights.
Yeah, true,
lots of alcohol at lunches and dinners.
Yeah, drinking.
Riding into the city from your place in the suburbs.
Oh,
The train.
The train. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, the train into the city. The neighbor is named Frank. Of course, Frank was the name of Leo's character, and also Frank from If We're Going All the Way Back to Departed.
Yep.
And I have one other thing.
If you can.
Good job.
Yep, Frank Abagnale. Abagnale. Clementine says to Joel when he calls her a wino, which I thought was like this part also.
Yes.
Are you from the 50s or something? Which I don't think wino is like a 50s expression. That's just like an expression people use. Maybe maybe she needs to see Sideways and she'll understand what winos are. thing.
Don't watch that.
Please don't.
Are you from the 50s or something? Is what I wrote down that whole quote as a potential connection.
Potential.
All right, what's our title connection?
I thought it could be something about Kate's house falling down. Inside Kate's house, something like that.
Kate's house tumbling down?
Yeah, something like that.
Kate's house crumbling.
What about, well, this doesn't really work. I was going to say Kate's rocky road.
Because Kate's, crumbling the rocky Kate's crumbling relationship.
House crumbling.
Kate's crumbling relationship. Yeah.
No, house.
Oh, or a house, okay.
Because the house, there is a house.
Yeah, the house.
Yeah, but well, okay, but it was when they were David and Ruth. It was their house.
Exactly.
It was. I liked when she said she was ruthless.
Yes, that was funny. Yeah.
Just little things. That is good Charlie Kaufman stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah. So what are you doing, Kate's crumbling house?
Yep. Yeah.
All right. Don't get those crumbs everywhere, Kate. Connections to other movies we've done this year.
Yeah, you mentioned The Departed and the, the Frank of it all. What else do we have?
The only one I had was the drunken car accident. He wasn't drunk.
Make me think of Wolf of Wall Street.
Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh, yeah, Wolf of Wall Street, yeah.
I definitely thought about that.
Car accident in Chinatown, car accident. Because
especially because he comes out later and sees the aftermath, just like in Wolf of Wall Street, where he's like, oh.
That's me, write it down.
Yeah, car accidents in The Nice Guys as well. There we go.
I did say this last week, and I was wrong, but this week, I really don't think there's anybody besides Kate Winslet that we're not circling back to anybody from previous weeks besides last week.
No.
I think so.
No, I checked. This movie really doesn't have much of a credited cast. It's only got,
it's 20 very small, like 8 people, Ruffalo would have been at home in any one of the movies that we watched previously, except for Chinatown, probably, just because he wasn't alive when Chinatown was made. But
I think he was alive.
And he was like 2.
Now I'm wondering.
I don't know when he was born.
Wondering how old Mark Ruffalo
older than me, right?
It does seem like. I think it's because he's in Spotlight, but it seems like Ruffalo could have been in The Big Short. But I think it's
Because
I think he could have been an American Gangster.
Absolutely, he could have been one of the cops in American Gangster.
He would have been good.
Yeah, he would have been really good.
All right. Any other connections? Not a ton of connections.
Those were the big ones. I didn't really write. I had like no notes for this freaking movie.
Oh, I had a lot. Okay. All right, well, movie map. I think we already talked a little bit about it, but
I also said 12 Monkeys because of the sci-fi element, the messing with memory and going back in time, and
especially when they're doing the procedure, does feel Terry Gilliam to me. I wrote down a Terry Gilliam movie for next week. It feels like Terry Gilliam.
We could do Brazil next week.
Because of this movie, it might be on my list.
Yeah, it might be on somebody's list.
I put the Benjamin Button for the movie map because there's something about like this movie. He kind of goes through the memories backwards, right? And and Benjamin Button is like life can only be understood backwards, but you have to live it forward.
He's born, but he looked a lot older.
Right.
And I just think this movie also has the feel of Walter Mitty, kind of a boring guy going through this fantasy.
And Ben Stiller and Jim Carrey work together on The Cable Guy.
Very true.
Which is an underrated movie in my opinion.
I do like The Cable Guy.
I really enjoyed it.
Weird movie. I like the movie.
It's very weird.
It's one I'd like to revisit. I have not seen it since I was young lad. All right. One last thing.
Oh, well, okay, I thought of one. This is just kind of stupid. But, you know, where they're on the beach and she, like, rubs snow in his face?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I just thought, poor Jim Carrey. Is it, you know, as a Canadian, there's, like, there's nothing worse than a face full of snow when you're playing outside. It's awful. And, you know, Kate Winslet being British maybe doesn't know how painful that is. But poor Jim Carrey. No doubt experienced it as a child and then had to go through it again in this film.
Yeah. Also, I think the other side of that is I don't care, like, how safe you think the ice is. Never drag me in my boots out onto a frozen pond.
Well, but that wasn't very deep. The dead,
no, but still, no, it's a dangerous idea. This is bad. I'm not doing this. I'm out on that relationship at that exact moment. I'm like, nope.
I was trying to think if there was a movie that we had recently done where somebody falls through the ice, but then I remembered that was True Detective.
True Detective, yes.
Brandon, do you have one last thing?
No, I'm good. My last thing was the thing about the ice. So
don't take you on the ice. All right, mine is it's another little subtle thing, but I do love when the technicians are pulling up to Joel's apartment.
Yes.
And they're complaining that they can't see the address because it's not lit and it's not big enough, which as a former delivery driver is so annoying when you can't see people's house numbers. And it's also dangerous because if you call an ambulance and they can't see your house number, it's going to take them longer to get to your house.
Or you accidentally go to the wrong house or apartment or something like,
which could have been a version of this movie where they go to the wrong person's house and they erase somebody's memory.
Who's just that would be interesting.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Knock on the door and the guy, you're like, I'm here for the lunch bag.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Wrong lunch bag. I do think like you could do a whole series of this movie of like different, like kind of like a procedural type thing of like different people erasing their memory and the implications of it. Could be like an
episode. Well, speaking of which, there actually was a TV show in development in 2016 based on the concept of this film, and it never went anywhere.
I think it's a good concept to build from, but in the right hands, it would be good. Gotta be somebody who's gonna give it some thought. All right. Cool. All right. Well, shall we figure out what we're gonna be watching next week?
Yes, please.
Okay. Got suggestions sent in by the listeners and us, your hosts. Once we do pick that movie, send your feedback at Ladder Movie on Twitter and Instagram, themovieladder@gmail.com. And with your score, your suggestions after this will be next week is movie 219. Movie 220 will be coming up after that. We'll have to talk, Brendan, because in between episode 219 and 220, we're going to see each other in person. Although
indeed,
I don't know if I don't know if we'll do it in person, but we have next week. We can decide how that schedule will look. All right. Alex O kicks us off. I like, Brendan, that you're putting, have you been doing this for a while, or you put the person whose suggestion was picked first?
No, not always. It just depends on how the emails are in my inbox and how I decide to structure
them. I thought you did this. Well, I like that as like a little prize in addition to points.
Surprise.
All right. Alex O kicks us off. Another fantastic sci-fi film with a character enduring memory loss. Dark City. That one I thought of.
That is a crazy movie. I remember that. Yeah, I saw that movie in theaters. Yeah.
More Jim Carrey, Man on the Moon. Mm-hmm. Man on the Moon also could be like a sci-fi movie. Like that title could be a sci-fi movie in another.
On my list. Yep.
And more Michel Gondry on my list, The Science of Sleep.
Yep. Don't know anything about this movie, but I want to see it.
I've never seen that.
It was on my list as well. Yeah. All right, Ron taking the title connection and using Sunshine.
Yep.
Danny Boyle, Sunshine 2007. I did think about that one.
So not the Melancholia? Canadian film Sunshine.
Yeah.
Oh, Melancholia. Nice.
Yeah. Kirsten Dunst in Strained to it as well. And then taking one off of my list, Total Recall, dealing with lost memories.
I just watched that. I watched that on Saturday, and I was like, whoa, this is appropriate.
Yeah, I was thinking... I kind of hope somebody suggested the Colin Farrell version, just because I haven't seen that version, and I've seen the Arnold version so many times. But
yeah, I saw the Colin Farrell version. No, nothing special. But I do think, and I didn't bring this up because I didn't want to spoil Total Recall on my list. But I think the shots of Joel in the chair when he's in the doctor's office and he's getting the first like memory mapping.
Yep.
It's very similar where he's got like the thing around his head. I also feel like if we did Total Recall, like the movie map would be pretty easy for next week.
Well, yeah. I love Total Recall.
Travis, a little outside the box for my suggestion this week. I nominate Batman Forever. Nice. Jim Carrey with an electric apparatus on his head.
That's very true. He loves putting weird apparatus on his head, doesn't he?
Apparatus.
Yeah.
All right. Robbie has The Truman Show. Yes, that does seem like a very natural pairing with this movie for the Jim Carrey and the kind of surreality of it all. And then Spider-Man 2, Kirsten Dunst in 2004.
Yep. There you go. Nice.
Right. And Jim Crumley, not to be confused with Jim Carrey. Some of the best rungs are ineligible for a variety of reasons. The regime he put. Oh, okay. So he's suggesting. Okay. So Jim is suggesting everybody watch The Regime then.
Memento is
his other one, but there are many great movies dealing with memory to consider. While any Philip K. Dick movie probably qualifies, I do love Philip K. Dick stories. They're always good. The memory machine technology of Total Recall, or We Can Remember It For You Wholesale, which is the name of the book from 1990, is so close. The movie's from 1990, is so close to that of Eternal Sunshine, yet it takes a different direction.
Yes, it does.
Or if you still feel like going in an action direction with a more mundane take on memory loss, why not The Bourne Identity?
Yep.
Plus, Kathy Nelson worked in the music department of both, including as the music guru on Eternal Sunshine. What a great job title.
There you go. That is a good music title. Guru is good. Yeah.
Like music that. Was very, very good in Eternal Sunshine.
Yeah, I like this. The score is really nice, I think. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like you hear that score a lot. Like, you just hear that used in different things.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, then my brother Aaron has Little Fishes, which is a movie I've never heard of. Says deals with memory loss. I don't think it's like in the Finding Dory sense, but it is called Little Fishes and it deals with memory loss.
Oh man, Finding Nemo is a great suggestion.
Oh, Finding Nemo really is. Yeah. Just keep not too swimming. Late. Just keep swimming.
All right. Well, he says Little Fishes, not any of the Finding Nemo, Finding Dories.
It's just with memory fish, loss. Not Little Fishes.
Oh, Little Fish, sorry. So is that like a sequel to Big Fish?
I thought it was Big Fish, and he was just confused until I read his feedback. Yeah.
He says, deals with memory loss and impacts on relationships, and was lost in the shuffle due to COVID, one of the best movies of the 2020s.
No Little Fish.
Yeah. And speaking of 2020s, the number 23 is his other suggestion.
Good one.
Nice.
All right. Olin's, his first suggestion, I don't feel at home in this world anymore. Elijah Wood in a film about establishing an awkward relationship as main character gets extremely irritated with those around them. Next one.
That's the title of the movie?
Yes, I don't feel at home in this world anymore.
Okay.
That's a long title.
It is.
He says someone who just watched Eternal Sunshine as well.
Yes, it's true. Yeah. My Darling Clementine, it says next one, John Ford Western, that can see Henry Fonda return.
That was on my list, yeah.
Some Like It Hot, a film that opens on Valentine's Day.
Yep. Some Like It Hot.
There we go. And that is it for listener suggestions.
Mega the Librarian, as you are still the guest and not a host, you get to go first again for the third week in a row.
I can't believe two of my suggestions, I am shocked, have not been taken off of.
Yeah.
We'll see if Megan.
There's a couple of mine as well.
Okay, well, my first one is going to be Arrival, because I feel like it has the same kind of message about being open to pain, even though you know it's coming.
Ooh. I have been wanting to watch Arrival since I got out of Dune, too. Yeah.
And also Arrival is a great, great movie.
So good.
Yeah. Then I have Sense and Sensibility, which is Kate Winslet and Tom Wilkinson together again in a movie about romance.
Mm-hmm.
And some could say memory is a sense.
I suppose it is.
Sense of memory is a thing, yes.
Yeah, sense memory. There you go.
There you go.
Sense of memory is a good title connection if we did Sense and Sensibility.
Good call. Yeah. All
right. I have Wonder Boys, which is an indie movie that I saw. I never forget an Ula. Jane Addams plays Ula in Wonder Boys. This movie also stars someone who would go on to be in the MCU.
Mm-hmm. It's Michael Douglas, right?
Oh, yeah, and Robert Downey Jr. And also somebody from a Spider-Man movie, because it's Tobey Maguire.
Spider-Man, yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like it has...
Whenever I hear Wonder Boys, I think of the Tenacious D song.
The Tenacious D song?
Oh, yes.
Wonder Boy!
Yeah.
But anyway, I feel like it just has the same kind of vibe. Sort of indie, like,
as,
crazy
as
night.
The Tenacious D song? Good. Yeah.
Okay, well, that too. anyways, just I liked all those weird random cast connections. Okay, and then I did put Finding Neverland on my list. I didn't know Zach didn't like Finding Neverland.
I mean, we're talking about the movie, not the documentary.
Well, it's like Kate Winslet in 2004, and the movie is about, you know, well, it's also about dealing with loss, kind of, and how you find ways to cope. And then, you know what? I'm gonna say Finding Nemo.
There you go.
I love Finding Nemo.
Take all the Finding N movies.
No, that's true. I didn't think about that, but I just love that movie. I'm actually not that into animated movies at all, except I really adore Finding Nemo.
Albert Brooks's voice performance in that film is just out of this world. Yeah, so good.
I guess we now, and like now we know Ellen is not such a nice person, right, but she is great.
She's
as
good.
Dory.
Yeah, she's good in the movie.
That's another character that could be very irritating.
Oh yeah,
but manages not to be somehow.
Yeah.
Okay. That's
all right,
it.
Zach,
I get to go next. All right. Good. Well, this is the first movie I wrote down, and that is Her, a sci-fi movie.
I think that's number
sci-fi
two.
Romance movie.
Yeah, that's,
I think that's
the
number two Letterboxd connection. Yeah,
it is. Yeah, it is. I saw it on there. But I just think like that is the movie. Details and like really some of the ideas behind it. So that is a movie that has grown with each watch. And I think it's a movie that is like subtle, like the subtlety that it has with some of the ideas and the set design and things like that, I think is really impressive. So it's a movie that was good on revisit. Another one I will do, it is Oscars week, a movie about relationships lost, you know, recapturing time being fleeting, regret, and relationships found, Past Lives.
There you go. That was on my list.
Best picture this year.
Good job. That was on my list.
I got very much like Past Lives doesn't have the sci-fi element, but it does have a lot of the same ideas.
It deals a lot with memory and,
what
ifs.
You know, you talked about Megan, you talked about you can tape over a tape, you can record over a tape. You got to make sure you rewind that tape. Uh-huh. Michelle Gondry made a movie with Jack Black called Be Kind Rewind about some guys that I think they want to make a movie that I think they might work at a video store or something.
I think they accidentally erase all the tapes.
Jack Black
in the
Almost
video
Death.
Store. Yeah. I've never seen that, but
that's
it's
right.
on my list.
You're right. That is the concept. They accidentally erase all the videos and then they have to like they make their own versions and then everybody
It's like have you ever seen the what is that dragon movie with Christian Bale? Where,
oh, Rain of Fire.
Yeah, where they like act out Star Wars because they don't have movies anymore. Yeah,
exactly.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty great.
I feel like Be Kind Rewind, we would have a million ways to go movie-wise because I'm sure they reference like a ton of movies.
Yeah. What if they're all movies you've already done? That would be unfortunate.
That would be very impressive. Megan, how many did you do? One, two, you did,
I did five.
All right, so I just got to count what I'm going with. How about Old Boy? A movie about somebody who loses their memory, forms relationships with people, doesn't know how they got to where they are. A little bit different, though. It's a movie I just wanted to revisit. And my last one, it is Oscars week. This movie has Mark Ruffalo in it. It is about somebody who loses their memory. It is coming to Hulu/Disney+ this Thursday, and it is up for Best Picture. That is Poor Things.
Hell yeah.
I thought you were going to make a major faux pas and say Shutter Island.
No. But I did say to Zach in the chat last night, we can just do Shutter Island again.
The day that one of us suggests a movie we've already done is the day the podcast ends.
Oh, absolutely. Ooh. Yeah.
That's like the
day one of us does it. Yeah.
The Doughboys doing McDonald's.
That's the end. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, that is our last one. It's Robert Akiva hitting episode 360. It is that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the end.
And there is one I kind of wish I would have picked instead of Old Boy, but that's okay.
All right. Man, I'm actually running kind of low on...
Do you want Old Boy?
speaking of Oscars, a movie that deals with memory and relationships and paths not taken, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Hmm.
Best Picture winner.
Yep, and a Best Picture winner, speaking of Oscars. I will go with Tom Wilkinson kind of being a sleaze, and he gets hooked up with someone whose job it is to make problems disappear, like memories, Michael Clayton.
Ooh.
Michelle Clayton.
Let's see what else. There's a lot of hurt feelings in this. I know I said it last week, but what about you hurt my feelings?
Yeah. On my also rants. Yep. Also David Cross in a small role.
Very true. A Jim Carrey movie
with,
I haven't...
deals with relationship issues in like a different type of way. Yep. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, a Jim Carrey movie I haven't seen, Yes Man. And then to close it out, I'm going to go with a film that is high concept sci-fi in a different way, which is, but it deals a lot with relationships and reckoning with your past, Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
More CanCon.
Yep. Those are my...
Another Avenger in that movie.
Yep.
Another That's Avenger. Right. And I, yes.
And a Superman.
I was going to say that there's an Avenger in Arrival too, because Jeremy Renner is.
True. Yeah. All right. Also,
Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, one of those movies that never really works for me.
Yeah.
It's like fine, but I don't get why people like it so much. Is it? Oh no, that's a Culkin who's the.
Yeah,
who's
the I always confuse Elijah Wood in this and Karen Culkin in that for sure. Yeah. All right. Let me take it from the top. Yep. Mm-hmm. We have Dark City, Man on the Moon, The Science of Sleep, Sunrise, Melancholia, Total Recall, Batman Forever, The Truman Show, Spider-Man 2, Total Recall again, The Bourne Identity, Little Fish, The Number 23, I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore, My Darling Clementine, Some Like It Hot, Arrival, Sense and Sensibility, Wonder Boys, Finding Neverland, Finding Nemo, Her, Past Lives, Be Kind Rewind, Old Boy, Poor Things, Everything Everywhere All at Once, Michael Clayton, You Hurt My Feelings, Yes Man, and Scott Pilgrim versus the World. I get to go first this week.
Before you go.
How dare you?
I think that there should be a word for when a title is a phrase, like a long phrase, like, I don't feel at home in this world. I don't know how to explain that, but I always like, they're always hard to remember and they're very long, and I kind of group those two titles.
It's like a sentence title. Yeah, it's a sentence instead of a title.
It's just like a phrase. Anyways, I just thought of that when you were talking, so
I know this is one that you and I were thinking of. I'm gonna do my listener pick first. I know that you know, it came up for me, I think it came up for you. I actually kind of like the idea of revisiting the Arnold Total Recall and then maybe doing the not so great Colin Farrell afterwards in 2 weeks. We could see. But I'm gonna go with Total Recall as my listener pick.
We're no longer tied to Oscar month, so we can do we can do crappy movies now.
Honestly, this movie could have been nominated for something.
Oh yeah, Total Recall was great. I'm talking
Total Recall is great. Yeah.
And yes, I know before I get a message, I know crappy movies also get nominated for Oscars, as we know.
Yeah, in the down Neverland.
Yes. All right. Like Flaming Hot, nominated for an Oscar this year.
Hell yeah.
All right. Well, that was going to be my listener pick. All right. I guess I will go with The Truman Show, because I feel like it is very
that
much
That is
a,
also, yeah. That was on my also
very much feels a pairing with this movie. Yep. It's come up a million times.
For sure. True.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Megan?
I
know what pick.
Do you?
I think I know what you're going to pick.
No, I'm going to pick Sunshine.
Oh, yeah. Not what I thought you were going to pick. Not the 2000... Well, that's 2007, never mind.
Yeah.
There is a Canadian movie called Sunshine, starring Rosemary Harris, who plays Aunt May in Spider-Man 2. But anyway.
And speaking of Oscar nominees, a couple of Oscar nominees in Sunshine.
For that?
Yeah, Michelle Yeoh and Cillian Murphy are both in that, And she will be presenting him with his Oscar this weekend.
Hell yeah.
And if we do that, that will be movie number 11 of 2007. 2007, already our most watched year, but it will continue to be our most watched year with that movie.
Yep, love that movie. All right, for my host / guest pick, I will go with Poor Things.
Nice.
Dealing with memory, dealing with Mark Ruffalo, best picture nominee, best everything nominee. I adored this film when I saw it, and I'm really glad you adored it, Zach. It's coming to streaming. Why not? It'll be fun.
This week? Yeah. Also, like, it's a movie that is directed to show, like, the world in a very weird way.
Yes, for
sure. In a way that you interpret it in your mind, which is not the way that it is. Well,
yeah,
that's my interpretation.
Weird,
is the way you
yeah, it's got, like, a weird Wes Anderson thingy that it does at a certain point. Yeah.
I mean, it is Yorgos, so, of course, it's going to be weird. But glad that you picked that. Not to put my thumb on the scale. Denny Villeneuve in the zeitgeist right now, so I will take Arrival off of Megan's
there
list.
You go. Nice.
Arrival's great.
Yeah. Okay. I have it on my list to rewatch, so. Glad to have a reason.
I'm going to take Be Kind Rewind because I've been meaning to watch that.
All right. You can go,
Megan.
Nice. I like Jack Black.
Two Zach picks. All right. Final six are Total Recall, The Truman Show, Sunshine, Four Things, Arrival, and Be Kind Rewind. Be Kind Rewind was on my list as well, as it also ran. So glad somebody took it, wrote it down. Yeah, cool things. What do you got, Zach?
I'm trying to pull up the what these are all streaming on. Also Rans, I had Being John Malkovich, Anomalisa, which is the one I wish I would have subbed in there because that's a great relationship story. Charlie Kaufman wrote Brazil and Blue Ruin.
Yeah, a couple other ones that came up last week, like Don't Worry, Darling, I wrote down again just in case. And then 50 First Dates we talked about, which was on my list here, but we didn't end up going with it. I also thought it'd be funny to just suggest Eraser, just because that's like, you know, the job.
Or Eraserhead.
Yeah, or...
Another Arnold movie would be The Eraser. Not Eraserhead, but...
I went with a different Arnold movie, so there you go. The Breakup, I also thought was an interesting connection. Mm-hmm. And also, I can't believe none of us... I mean, you mentioned Linklater earlier, Zach, but none of us mentioned Before Sunrise. And I really think I think Before Sunrise would have been a really strong connection to this as well, because of how they meet. And the way that you montage through that relationship, like, yeah, it would have been a very, it would have been like the opposite of this, basically.
I would have done Before Midnight if I picked one of the Before trilogy, which I thought about. All right. Well, in terms of streamability, Total Recall is rentable. Also looks like it's on AMC Plus.
Total Recall in Canada, it's on CTV's website for free with ads.
That's wild. Nice. It's probably streaming on the USA Network, like, right now. It's probably streaming on some random cable channel right now.
It does say Paramount Plus on Apple TV, so, you know, sometimes...
That usually does mean Paramount Plus, so... I think Truman Show's on Netflix, right? It's on Netflix, right?
No, rentable online.
Oh.
In Canada, it's on Paramount Plus.
Oh, right.
Sunshine, rentable only.
Canada, it's on Disney Plus.
Wow.
Arrival is streaming places.
I think that's also on Netflix.
Peacock and Paramount Plus.
Paramount Plus in Canada.
Well, Peacock and Paramount? Crazy. Those two should merge or something.
Maybe they will. And then Be Kind Rewind is, that's streaming some places as well.
Yeah.
Oh, it's only rentable in Canada. What the heck?
And we did talk about Poor Things coming to streaming on Thursday.
Oh, yeah, it's good. Poor Things. Yeah. On Hulu. Be Kind Rewind on Hoopla and also on Max.
Poor Things will be on Disney Plus
Canada,
in Canada,
FYI. Yeah. Canadian Disney Plus.
Because, of course, it will be.
So make sure your kids check it out after they're done watching Disney movies.
So, yeah. I don't know. What do y'all think? Kind of between, if I can give my thumb on the scale at all, I think I'm kind of between our two Oscar ones, which are Arrival and Poor Things. But I don't know if you're, I don't know how y'all feel. Like, those are, I'm kind of between, like, rewatching one of those two movies.
I could see an argument for all except Sunshine. No offense. I think Sunshine is
like,
I don't
a think the connection's strong connection. Enough. Yeah.
Okay.
Unfortunately, it's just
I don't really like Sunshine that much.
I think Sunshine's great. I just don't think it's a strong enough connection.
All right. Yeah, I mean, Poor Things, I think, would be, like, very timely. Makes sense. It might come away with some awards this weekend. I think Arrival, I forgot Arrival won Best Picture.
It did not. And Amy Adams was totally snubbed by the Academy.
Yeah, that's right.
Very true. Egregious.
In my mind. What won Best Picture that year?
That's not the Slumdog year, right?
No.
Should have known this.
Is that the Green Book year?
It's Midnight. Or Moonlight. Moonlight.
Oh, Moonlight. Moonlight's deserved.
Yeah, that was the Moonlight year.
Best Picture that year. That's right.
Okay. Yeah. Nice.
Moonlight. You win Best Picture.
Total Recall, I think, would be very fun to do. And I think it does take, like, a different spin on this memory idea. Mm-hmm. Truman Show. I mean, I don't know. I could see all of these. Be Kind Rewind, I think, would be fun for... Because I don't think a lot of people have watched it, and I think it would give us lots of connections off of it.
True.
I don't know.
Megan,
what do you think? Which one do you want? Which one do you want us to do?
I don't know. I just watched Total Recall, so... I wouldn't watch it again.
Okay.
No, but I mean, right. That doesn't mean you don't have to do it. I don't know. I don't know. I can't decide.
I think I would be more drawn to watching Total Recall if we were immediately doing the Colin Farrell version and not the Schwarzenegger version.
I think you're building up the Colin Farrell version too much in your head.
But it's just because I haven't seen it, and I want to watch something I haven't seen if I'm going to watch one of the two. You know what I mean?
Let's do Poor Things.
Okay.
We got the Oscars this weekend. It's coming to streaming this week.
Yeah, let's do it. It's fortuitous timing to do Poor Things. I agree.
And maybe Poor Things pulls some kind of upset at the Oscars and wins Best Picture.
And
wins
something.
And then we're really timely.
That would
have
be surprising.
Have we ever done a movie that was nominated the week of the Oscars? I don't know if we've done Oscars. I don't feel like we have, but I feel
I don't think we have. I think we've done something the year before, but no. Yeah, this is exciting. I like Poor Things a lot. I'll be interested to see how it holds up to my memory of seeing it in the theater.
Right.
And this is our first Yorgos film, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Poor Things. You cannot watch it until Thursday, so that's going to put you behind the eight ball. Well, I guess you can if you have other ways of watching it. But if you're trying to stream it, you can't stream it until Thursday.
Is this our first Emma Stone as well?
Can't imagine that's the case, but maybe
it might be. I think it might be.
We'll find out.
Yep,
it's our first Jared Carmichael. I know that.
Yep, didn't know that. Exciting.
All right, Poor Things coming up next week. Good luck to Poor Things in the Academy Awards.
Good luck to Poor Things.
And yeah, do you think this is the first Emma Stone movie we've done? As I'm scrolling through her.
Okay, yeah, because I know she's been nominated for a bunch of stuff that we've almost done, like La La Land. Yeah.
Also in a Spider-Man movie. Also an actress who's in a Spider-Man
movie. Also very true, yeah.
Not the
good
ones.
Garfield Spider-Mans, right? Yep.
Right. AKA the bad
Poor Things coming up next week. Besides Poor Things, what are you guys looking forward to watching this week? And besides the Oscars, because that goes without saying.
I am looking forward to watching the Oscars.
Yeah. Richard Linklater has a three-part documentary series on HBO right now, called God Save Texas. It's hard to say I'm looking forward to watching it. I was talking to you about this earlier, Zach, because it seems like it's pretty heavy subject matter dealing with, the history of Texas as a state and the current societal implications that history has had on the way that state is run, including, oil and energy and the prison system. But I do want to check it out, and I'm hoping to get through all of it this weekend, but that's on HBO Max. So there you go.
Nice.
Yeah. And I love Richard Linklater, so I mean, I feel obligated to watch it, even if it's, a little heavy on the heavier side.
Nice. Megan, how about you?
Well, as soon as we finish here, I'm going to go watch the first episode of Big Brother Canada.
Nice.
So I'm looking forward to that. I cannot get into US Big Brother, but I do enjoy BBCan. So, and then I am going to be watching a 90s movie I've never seen before for my Letterboxd season challenge. The prompt is a movie from the Good for Her cinematic universe. And so I'm watching 10 Things I Hate About You.
Nice.
Which I believe is also on Disney Plus. No, I've never seen it. I don't know. Don't know why. Just never saw it. Yep. And then I think next week for that challenge is a movie with music by Carter Burwell. So I'm going full Heath Ledger and going to watch A Knight's Tale for that.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a fun movie. It's not necessarily good, but it's fun. Yeah.
I think I'll probably like it.
Yeah. I've never seen it. Mm-hmm. All right. I am looking forward to watching American Fiction because it's the one Best Picture nominee I haven't seen yet.
There you go.
But hopefully you can get streaming anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. And we'll see everybody next week for Poor Things.
Yep.
On Hulu on Thursday.
Get excited for some furious jumping.
Some reviews if my computer can handle it.
Yes.
Good luck.
All right. Yes.
Find a bad one.
Find a bad one. Well, I haven't found very many bad ones. Sean Fantasy says, still powerful soft science fiction about the profound unhappiness of adult life on Long Island.
Fair. It's been personal experience there, huh?
Yeah, no, there's really not any bad ones. Owen on the other side of that. One and a half. Karst says this also happened when I dyed my hair.
That's good.
James, speaking of Olin, James says, wish I could erase this film from my mind just so I can watch it for the first time all over again.
There you go.
That's sweet. That's a good way to end.
Yes. I got more. Ah, my favorite genre of film, pain.
That's good too. I like that.
And I think this is a good one to go out on. This is from number one Gizmo fan, who says, I pray people get broken up with so I can recommend this movie.
Oh my god.
Oh, that's wow.
That's very dark.
Weird.
Sad. Yeah.
Well, poor things coming up next week.